The Bitcoin Group, the American original. For over the last 10 seconds, the sharpest Satoshis, the best Bitcoins, the hardest cryptocurrency talk. We'd like to welcome our panelists. Martin Wishmeyer from General Bytes.
Hello, Bitcoin.
Dan Eve, the Crypto Raptor.
Hey, everybody.
And I'm Thomas Hunt from the World Crypto Network. Moving on to issue one. Issue one, Bitcoin price jumps and recovers to $21,000. But the article changed. Oh, well. Bitcoin jumps after a strong jobs report with the 21,000 mark in sight. The Fed is still a worry. Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies have risen more than 3.5% in the last 24 hours to near 20,900, having traded previously around 20,600. Ethereum rose at much to $1,660.
Ooh.
I know, very close.
Prophecy of the future.
Mm-hmm. Martin Wishmeyer, what do you think about the Bitcoin price rising, even though the jobs report was not what they wanted, and stocks are still down?
I'm not terribly impressed. This is like a blimp on the radar. I think it's, you know, they can wake me up when there's a new all-time high. And until that happens, we'll just be building instead.
Dan Eve, what about the price of Bitcoin?
Well, I, for one, am over the moon because I have broken my incorrect streak, which is like 12 weeks long now. So I think I went up like last week, and so it seems we have gone up a little. But yeah, I'm with Martin. Price aside, like it's all cool when there's all-time highs. We're on that sort of sideways sort of motion, so. You know, the articles are generally, you know, 10% movement, you know, within a couple of weeks, and everyone's like freaking out or celebrating. But really, you know, until we're back at all-time high, it's neither here nor there. But the cool thing is that more stuff, as you always say, is just being built every day. There's more infrastructure being built and more projects popping out the woodwork. I just started using Satsback. I don't know if anyone started using it. I shifted from Quidco, and so I think cool sites like that help people get exposure to Bitcoin without actually, you know, putting money up front, right? Because a lot of people don't want to risk buying in Bitcoin and then being disappointed if it goes down or whatever, or but if you want to get into Bitcoin, just try and find a site like Satsback and just carry on with your normal life, shopping and throwing away your fiat money and get sats back for it. So I think it's a cool little idea. And
I for one got almost 1.5 million Satoshis back already on Satsback. So Satsback.com make me Satoshi millionaire, you know, in Satoshis.
Yeah.
Oh, 1.5 million. But I saw somebody that already had like 5 million sats back from shopping. So yeah, that's cool.
I just like that earn. I was on. Well, I signed up when it was 21.co, like way before it was earn.com, and then bought out by Coinbase, and that was just really cool because you got paid for basically saying no to ICO shilling you. So like you'd open it up and it'd be like, would you like further more information? Blah blah blah, and you'd be like, no, and then it'd be like, you know, you get $2 in Bitcoin for this. So you know, it was beautiful just being paid to reject ICOs. But with this, yeah, at least you kind of, you know, you've got to shop anyway. Like a lot of people do online shopping. So get some cash back in Bitcoin and you're getting exposure to Bitcoin without putting your wallet up front. And I think it's a great way to kind of ease in.
Well, I think we all think that the price is going to go back up before the Bitcoin halving and that it could even go beyond the previous all-time highs, either after the halving or before the halving. Depend on how the media interprets and explains to people what's going to happen. We as Bitcoiners, we know that the halving is going to happen, that nothing can change it. It'll just vary from a couple of days when it actually happens. Everyone else will be, what do you mean? They're reducing the production of Bitcoin by 50%. 50% of the Bitcoin mines in the world are going to, shut down theoretically, right? They're going to shut down. That's insane. So because of that, we all think the price is going to go up. It's the question of when it starts going up and if you're in the right position when it goes up. Everyone's trying to time the bottom. Was this the bottom? Will it go down again? Will there be another 18,000? Will you get that bottom? But it doesn't really matter. You're never really going to hit the bottom perfectly. That's why you should probably be dollar cost averaging, where you'd get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. By buying $100 a week or something like that, you'll get a variance of the bottom rather than trying to catch the actual bottom. Because, Dan, what if this was it? What if this was the bottom and people missed their chance to, you know, slide their money back in the market?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's going to go lower. That's not going to be my prediction, but I do think, I don't know, man. I think, you know, it's what, 76% from all time high was kind of the peak of, and it's usually around 80 to 85%, right? So I don't know. I'm thinking there's some short-term sideways, maybe even a little mini pump to 24, 26, and then, you know, down again. It's still 2 years nearly, or a year and a half at least till the next halving. But what, you know, you kind of made a really good point about, like, the when the halving happens, it's like half of the miners just shutting off. So you don't get all the bullshit about, overproduction or conglomerates or whatever, like OPEC or whatever, deciding to either increase production or decrease production. They literally can't do that. The miners can't do that. The maximum they will get is an average of 10, a block a minute, a block every 10 minutes. And you can't change that. And people aren't going to, you can, but it's so highly unlikely to be able to, that people will actually change it. And that's what's good about it. There's
no vote, no market conditions. It's not like if Bitcoin hits this, or if this happens, or if the jobs report is no good, we're going to do this.
Yeah,
it just happens on a schedule. And I don't think that the media has explained this to people enough. I think that there's a possibility this time of the reaction being different if people realize what's happening beforehand. Obviously, there's a lot of very smart people running a lot of family offices and large banks and so forth who are going to want to put their money back into Bitcoin to take advantage of this halving. The question is, when are they going to do it? Was this the time? Will next time be the time? Is it going to go to 18? Does it go to the 12 or the 10 that Dan keeps looking for? Or does it come back up? No one knows. We're all going to find out. And the only one who does know is the magical Bitcoin predictor ball that you'll now be predicting against, Martin Wischmeyer. Will the price be higher or lower this time next week?
I'm keeping a positive stride here. I think it's like it will be a bit higher. Don't expect any miracles yet, but a bit higher.
Dan, Eve, is this positivity continuing?
It is, and I think we are just going to take a little slight climb. Yeah, I think especially that, you know, there's more articles circulating now about how Bitcoin's decoupling from the rest of the market. So I think there's actually some real positive news articles from the mainstream ones rather than just kind of, you know, it all being our environmental FUD. So it's quite balanced at the moment. I think that's going to impact, you know, positively.
I'm hearing a lot of waffling, but it comes out positive. We have an all positive panel. We're shaking the ball, which can create bubbles, according to the Wikipedia. Will the price be higher this time next week? Reply hazy, try again. Reply hazy, try again. That's why the Bitcoin predictor ball is such an incredible source of predicting power, because sometimes it refuses to predict, which is also a prediction. Moving on to issue two, women will save Bitcoin. According to Tim Draper, legendary venture capitalist, man who suggested that Hotmail put a footer on every email they sent, advertising Hotmail, and the genius buyer of the Silk Road Bitcoins, ending up with tons of Bitcoin while the United States gets no new Smithsonian museums. They could have kept the money and built the museums. Instead, they gave it to Tim Draper. And Tim Draper says women could save Bitcoin. You've heard it before. He says that women control 80% of retail spending, and they are only 1 out of 6 Bitcoin wallets. Dan, Eve, why won't women use Bitcoin? Why?
Oh, I've got no idea. Maybe. Well, the thing is, like, this is always treading on careful territory, right? Because, I actually, from my experience from shilling Bitcoin, has always been that women have been far more receptive than men, like by a long shot. You know, my getting my mum and my sister into Bitcoin it was a lot easier than my dad. And likewise for other men, like people have talked about at work, the women were more interested, but they were more interested from a kind of theoretical level, but didn't actually buy. Maybe that's slightly this is a problem, right? When getting into this, whatever you're doing, you're going to generalize in some way. So maybe women are slightly more cautious when it comes to, you know, their risk, a bit more risk averse, right? Whereas men do, you know, they're more likely to gamble and do crazy stuff and jump out of a plane and all sorts of crazy weird things that men do. That mean that they die younger on average than women. So maybe that kind of that's part of the reason. But ultimately, if as they pointed out in the article, that women control 80% of retail spending, then it seems like it could be a good thing to get more women into Bitcoin. Whether it's the women will save Bitcoin is obviously a bit of a funny headline, because Bitcoin, you know, let's be honest, Bitcoin doesn't need saving, whether it's from women or men or non-binaries or whatever. Like it doesn't need saving. It's a honey badger that's relentless and resilient. So having more women in the industry is always good. It's not like a good experience going to a conference and it just being full of sausage. Not that there's anything wrong with sausage, but it's nice having a bit of a mixture, right? You know, so I think it's a good thing to have more women in the industry, whether that's coding, whether that's contributing to the infrastructure, building, you know, products. Either way, it's good to have a bit of variety.
Well, obviously, this panel made up of three white men is going to solve the female in Bitcoin problem. But I want to go ahead and throw myself right on that third rail that Dan was talking about. And I want to put forth a theory. I have no information backing this, but I want to say, what if women like spending money to get items, where you always get an item, but women don't like spending money to get risk, whether it be gambling or stocks or Bitcoin? They don't like the uncertainty of that idea. They would prefer to, you know, feather their nest, to build their nest in a safe way. Whereas men, as Dan was saying, are outgoing and risking and betting the whole tribe. And sometimes they fall off the cliff, right? Sometimes they lose all their money in these disasters, but they're not just doing it for the money. They're also doing it for like the adrenaline, for the kicks, for the thrill of winning, right? And some women certainly have this and some men don't have it and vice versa and so forth. But if we're talking in generalizations, I think they like spending it. I don't think they like risking it. Martin, what do you think? Am I totally out of line here?
I think you have a point there. That's, the numbers were a bit shocking. The fact that only one in six Bitcoin wallets is owned by women is a bit odd. You know, at General Bytes, we have a lot of women working in the office, and not just like, you know, but side things, but also like really like testing and stuff like that. So I never realized there is such a big gap in between. I think this is also something that's probably very regional. I think in the in Czech Republic and in Prague, for example, it's very much a healthy mix of men and women. But if you go to any Bitcoin conference, it's usually more like a sausage fest. I agree with them there. So yeah,
I forgot. Well, and unfortunately, I have access to our YouTube analytics, as dismal and awful as they may be. And our show here, which I think is pretty general and down the line, maybe a little boring sometimes, but it's 95% men. We are just drowning in sausage here. So
really?
Not from any intention or whatever it may be, but as it is, people are women, no offense, men, are not interested in this talking show. So I don't know how we're going to get them interested in Bitcoin. I was going to ask the classic exit question of, know, what can we do, or what kind of like, if we had a discount on shopping or whatever, but every answer that you give is pretty horrible. So let's go back to, and let's just predict future history here. Dan, give me a prediction. When will women enter Bitcoin? Is it just a question of popularity? If Bitcoin is ubiquitous, And everywhere, will women adopt it at the same rate as men when that happens?
I don't know. I mean, one thing I think plays into it is whether it's society driven or not, that Bitcoin and general tech has probably taken quite a long time for women to get into, partly because it was just seen as a really geeky, dumb thing. Like, you know, there's a stereotype of geeks, and usually the geek is a man, you know, and it was kind of almost like a turning point where Big Bang Theory made geekiness more of a you know, between both sexes, right? And I think that, and also you look at a lot of the articles, like loads of them, especially from like, is it Vice? I think they always have something that's like crypto bros or Bitcoin bros. They genderize it. And maybe that scares women off, actually. Instead of making women more likely to get into Bitcoin, they see these articles that just go, all the Bitcoin bros and the macho men in you know, an arrogance of Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and they just think, I don't want to be a kind of part of that. That I don't want to be involved in that, because who wants to be around a bunch of Bitcoin bros? You know, I think that might be quite off-putting rather than making people think, well, I can get into that industry and make a positive change. I think that the historic limelight that Bitcoin's had has been one of not very much positivity around it. And maybe that's also what has drawn, you know, women away more so than men. In the, you know, if we look at, you know, let's face it, crime rates, men are kind of a bit more likely to commit crime than women. And when a lot of the articles are about how Bitcoin's used for all these nefarious things and evil, you know, using for evil rather than good, that's probably put off a lot of women from getting into Bitcoin, because they don't want to be a part of that kind of crypto bro illegal culture. But in the future, I think we're seeing a lot more balance in conferences. Certainly, if you go to them like now, this is a slight, there was a Pepe art exhibition that I went to literally a couple of days ago, organized by. I don't know if he's still doxing himself or not, but so it's like there was much more women there than I actually expected, and some of the artists like Tasha Moon does some incredible stuff. You know, there's more people than you'd expect at these events, especially I think the art based ones. So I think ultimately it's just going to balance out a bit more as time goes on. It's one of those things that initially gets a lot of bad press and probably does put women off more, you know, specifically because they're less likely to take risk and be involved in something that's nefarious and crazy.
Well, on the other hand, I get daily emails, social media posts from gorgeous women that offer me to help me with my crypto portfolio management. So I've never met one, but every day they find me on social media and they say, you know, I could really help you build your portfolio and stuff. So I never really, I don't think they're real, but they're women though. Yeah.
They're CGI women.
I agree with Dan. I think that NFTs and crypto art are going to bring in a lot of women that aren't interested in finance, that aren't interested in crypto bros or encryption or any of the difficult topics that we might have here. But I still, when we bring up crime and crime being a male-dominated area, we go back again to this idea of risk. I think that women don't like risk. They don't want risk. They're less risky in crime. They're less risky in their romantic choices. They're less risky in their investment decisions. They like to play it cool. I don't think that there's anything technical stopping them from getting in, anything in like an economic understanding. I think all this information is available online. It's open and free. It doesn't like turn off because you're a girl, like the screen went away. The text is gone. No, text is available. Videos are there. Come on, women and girls and everyone else. Let's all get into Bitcoin. I'm excited for everyone to join. But I just don't think it's happened until there is no risk. And then I think they'll adopt just like everyone else. I don't think there'll be any, there's no barriers where women can't understand crypto or anything. So, Martin, what do you think? Is it the geekiness or is it the risk that's scaring women off?
Um, I wouldn't know how to answer that, but yes, it could be partly the geekiness, I think. The risk, I don't know, I don't see it really as a risk. You know, if you DCA your way into a nice Bitcoin stack, I don't consider that very risky. I think it's the geekiness, and on average, like we've seen girls like at our Bitcoin meetup in Amsterdam, and they even adopted a male nickname on the Telegram group because they didn't want to be bothered and pestered by geeks trying to whatever. So they even, they're like, you know, Danielle is her name, and she called herself Dan on the Telegram group. And it was only at the Bitcoin meetup that Dan turned out to be this beautiful blonde woman named Danielle. So I think, yeah, I think it's the geekiness and maybe the atmosphere is sometimes a bit hostile. I think, but.
Well, I mean, that might be true at the meetups and impersonal gatherings and things, but once again, online, you can go to Coinbase. There's no troll box. Nobody's going to make fun of you if you want to buy Bitcoin or Litecoin or whatever you're into. And the same thing for all the FAQ files, the frequently asked questions, the explainers, the videos like this and so forth. All the information is available to you. Please learn. Please make up your own mind and your own decision and invest at your own risk and so forth.
The only thing is the idea of like hiding in the her gender just because she was to be Dan instead of Danielle is that I've, and maybe obviously this is just anecdotal, but there's not one Telegram group I've ever been in where a lady said something who's got a lady persona or whatever, and someone's gone like, oh, a woman's talk, you know, like this, it's almost like an, I don't know, like a 70s, 80s view of like, I've never seen that. So it's a shame that people still feel that they have to pretend they're a guy to not want to get on, because it's not something that I've ever witnessed. And so, and I've been in a lot of Telegram groups with a lot of random different sort of things, not just Telegram groups. So it's a shame that people do have to do that, but because I've not really ever witnessed it. But like I said, it's anecdotal, right? There could be plenty of groups where someone's gone to say something and they've gone, oh, a woman is speaking, terrible. Know your limits.
Lots of people have adopted pen names for other issues because they're old or they're young or where they live or what they look like or whatever. So there's lots of reasons for people to use another name, and if that makes you feel comfortable.
No,
welcome Dan to the show.
Welcome Dan.
even if it makes this Dan feel bad.
Well, I was gonna say I think we should mix it up. So I'm gonna start identifying as Danielle now, so that there will be one out of the three of us will be female.
I'll have to keep working on that. Everyone can check out worldcryptonetwork.com, where we used to have female guests in the past, and would love to have female guests in the future. If you'd like to be on the show, send us an email or a tweet or something. Check out, we've got 3,013 videos. That's 3 months and 13 days, 17 hours if you watched it consecutively, which is the best way to get caught up. Everyone does this. They all go back and they tell me, I watched it 3 months long. 3 months, just on and on, worldcryptonetwork.com, forever and forever. Moving on to issue 3, Morgan Stanley says a record number of Bitcoin have not been used for 6 months. Bitcoin has traded in the narrowest range since 2020, suggesting that investors are holding on or hodling on for higher prices. Martin Wishmeyer, what do you think about this report that says that Bitcoin doesn't seem to move much anymore? Once people get a hold of it, they just seem to hold on to it.
I was a little bit surprised. I didn't know this 6 month holding is now a metric. I thought, you know, you'd have to at least keep it for a few years before it becomes a statistic. But now, no, you didn't touch it for 6 months. Are you a hodler? I was a bit surprised there, because people, they buy and they may sell later in the year. 6 months is like nothing. So now, if you hold your Bitcoin, hold it for at least 4 years, so you'll see some appreciation there. So I'm not sure what this statistic is supposed to mean. I think they just had a number and they decided to write an article about it.
You do have to wonder about how many stocks are flipped over, though. Are people selling their Amazon stock like every 3 months? And they're like, Amazon stock hasn't moved in 6 months because people like it and they're holding it. I'm not sure about that. But it is funny, like Martin's saying, that old coins now means 6 months old. I myself made a historic NFT all the way back in 2017. That's just 5 years ago. I still remember doing it. It's that historic, that long ago. Dan, Eve, what do you think about these old coins from 6 months not moving?
Oh, it's crazy. We've been all talking about the old Bitcoin that's 6 months old and still hadn't moved, like in the good old days. Now, it's a good point, right? It's this six, but then it's just a metric, right? It's, you know, I think that it's a metric that people are probably trying to use that just shows that investors aren't just willing to dump their coins. But this is Morgan Stanley. They probably, as most of the banks that have adopted or the ability or enabled the ability to buy Bitcoin for their clients, they're probably only over a certain amount of net worth or whatever, or some sort of, you know, service that goes out to certain customers. So they're probably less likely to be selling because they've got more general cash anyway. They've got more surplus cash than the average Joe that bought Bitcoin, average Jane that bought Bitcoin, that needs to sell it to live and to pay bills, etc. So I think it's a slightly skewed metric, and it's only relevant to say the tier of Morgan Stanley customers that are actually allowed to buy Bitcoin, but it is a good indicator anyway, in terms of it. So if it was applied to the whole blockchain of how much people are holding on to Bitcoin. It's just one of these metrics that's, you know, it's a basic indicator in its current form with an isolated group. But I think it's a much more interesting thing to look at the whole chain and how slow Bitcoin is moving. And there's been other analytics that show, like, the, you know, the 1 year plus holdings and moving of Bitcoin has been increasing year on year. So I think that's kind of really positive news overall.
I do think it's funny, too, that they use this reference to authority, that Morgan Stanley, the famous banking company, tells us that the Bitcoins have not moved. Well, you know who else tells us that? The publicly available blockchain. You could run your own report on the blockchain, figure out what Bitcoins haven't moved, and publish it yourself and be just as factually correct as the amazing investigative prowess of Morgan Stanley, the investor insight, all the people they have working on this. So I think that's great that they've worked on that. And then I want to go to the exit question, advice for holders. Even if we've said it before, what's your best advice for holders? Maybe something that people haven't thought of. Like, I know in the old days, if you had trouble not spending money, you'd take your credit card, you'd freeze it in a block of ice, and you'd put it in the freezer. And that way, you couldn't spend your money. Martin, what should people do to hold their Bitcoins other than by leaving them on an exchange, of course?
Well, the first step is to get yourself a wallet. My personal choice will be a Trezor. But others like to own or use Ledger or a gold card or whatever Bitcoin wallet you select. Make sure it's from a well-known brand. Order it at the original manufacturer. Don't order it from a third party. For security reasons, learn how to, you know, play around with it, wipe it, then restore it again. Do that a few times so you feel comfortable, and then take your coins off the exchange. This is really, really even as important, just as important as buying the Bitcoin, is taking them off the exchange. Because until you do so, you don't actually own the Bitcoin. Only after you have them in your account, in your wallet, then you own the Bitcoin. Otherwise, you just have a claim on some Bitcoin in your name, which will not really work out very well if the exchange goes bust. Other than that, there isn't much you need to do. Just keep that Bitcoin wallet and those recovery seeds. Keep them private. Don't share them with anybody. Don't get overexcited and tell everybody that you own Bitcoin. This is another security thing. And then look again at your wallet in, say, a year or four. I personally like to monitor, like, my stack with some software. I'm not gonna I'm not going to advertise our own software, but it is, I think, important to do some basic accounting, even if it's just for tax purposes, because you probably will have to pay a little bit of tax once you sell them again and realize your profit. But other than that, there's not much to it. But keep them off the exchange. Don't leave your coins on the exchange. That is the stupidest thing you can do. And believe me, I've been there. I lost 80% of all my Bitcoins over the years.
Another nice thing about taking your coins off the exchange is it will stop you from selling them, or at least it'll make it a little bit harder. So if you see the price drop suddenly and you lose all faith in Bitcoin and need to sell, well, you have to go find your Trezor, you got to put it in, you got to do the codes, you got to send the money, you got to wait for it to be sent. And maybe by then you'll have come to your senses and you only want to sell like 10% of your Bitcoin or 30% instead of all of it or none of it or all of it or none of it. And that would go into my second piece of advice, which is stop looking at the price. Welcome to Bitcoin. You're a brand new Bitcoiner, as Mad Bitcoin said to you almost 10 years ago. What are you going to do now? Check the price every 5 minutes. Check the price. Check the price. I've got a widget on my phone. It tells me the price. The price went up. The price went down. The price went up. You're driving yourself crazy. And next, you're going to start looking for gurus like the Magic Bitcoin 8-Ball that can predict the price for you. And you're going to just trust the guru. You're like, I got to get more advice from the guru. When's the guru show on? I need the guru. So don't look at the price. Don't invest more money than you can afford to lose. Dollar cost average, 10 bucks a week, 100 bucks a month, whatever it is comfortable for you. And don't look at it. Come back in 5 years. Be happy. Be surprised. Or come back in 5 years and we were completely wrong. Bitcoin's a terrible idea. Either way, you checking the price and selling and rebuying every 20 minutes is not going to work out in the long run. Not financial advice, do whatever you want, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we've been in a long time. And like Martin said, nobody plays it correct as well. I also want to give you permission to screw up. We all screwed up. We all sold when we should have bought. We all bought when we should have sold. We bought things in Bitcoin that are worthless now. I swear I have this wind chime. I think it's a 0.1. It might be a 0.3. I don't want to think about it. It's like a wooden wind chime.
Do you still have your Apalka socks? Because those were the only thing you could buy with Bitcoin back in the days. Really itchy Apalka socks.
And I think that the company that was selling those made off like bandits. They were geniuses if they held. But Dan, Eve, what's your advice to holders, to hodlers? What should the Bitcoiners do?
Yeah, I like what you said, to just ignore price, because you just get caught up in I mean, obviously, when everything starts to get hyped up and is near all-time high, then you know, everyone's bouncing off the walls and you can't avoid Bitcoin price. But keep again, as Martin said, keep your Bitcoin off exchanges. Use a hardware wallet where possible. I think the cool thing with Trezor supports, Trezor and Ledger are obviously the industry leading ones. Trezor's all open source, whereas Ledger isn't. Trezor supports Shamir secrets, which is where you can have multi-sig's a bad word, but you have like three out of five of the actual secrets that you can use to restore the key. Also, I like the way that that Trezor implemented the additional, the 13th word or the 25th word on top, right? With Ledger, you can only have, when you're actually using the Ledger, you can only have one separate kind of PIN that allows you to get in at each time. Whereas when you plug the Ledger in, you could have like a different word for ask you which word you'd like to add in. And you could, you know, it's a lot easier to see and access those different kind of, secrets. So I think that's probably better. It also means, I don't know, for me, the hardest thing is setting up the seed, because, you know, like every time I do it, if I've moved, I'm like, I write the words down, then I'm like, but what if my phone camera accidentally went over the words? So then like, I'll move to like a different room where, you know, I'll wipe a computer and you know, there's a massive technique that to doing it so that your OPSEC is completely through the roof. Now, if you really want to go to the nth degree, like you split your seed into two and then store two halves in four different banks, just in case, you know, one of the banks got, you know, banking vaults, you know, that sort of thing. But ultimately, you've got to apply a level of security that's probably going to match your assets that you have on it. So, you know, no one wants to lose money, but there's no point in sort of, you know, getting really anxious about storing your seed if you're only going to store like $100 of Bitcoin on it. Obviously, you've still got to secure it, but yeah, you know, I don't know. There's lots to read up on it, right? Because everyone's
different. I think that rolls into my other point, which is you can always buy two Trezors. You could buy three Trezors. You could buy two safe deposit box. You could buy two safes for your house. Like, you can split up your money, thanks to the power of Bitcoin, into many wallets. You could either do an exact copy of your money so that if someone steals one, you could go get the copy. Or you could even just, you know, break it up into like 0.1s or 0.01 or whatever. And just in case you lose everything else, you'll be like, I've still got that treasure that I buried under the house or whatever it may be. You have options. And this is something you might not think of originally, because you're like, oh, I got one treasure. It was expensive. I put all my money in there. And then if you look at your money now and you're like, this money is worth two treasures. You know, this money is worth two or three treasures. This is a lot of money. You can do that. And I just putting that idea out into people's heads. And then I also wanted to say that I think the best price chart for you to look at is whatever people tell you about Bitcoin. So if you meet somebody on the street and they're like, oh, I heard that Bitcoin went up a lot, that's when you have learned that it's gone up. If you meet them on the street and they're like, oh, it's gone down, and you see the newspaper headlines and you're like, oh, it's down, that's the way to do it. Because yeah, whenever your buddy from high school or college calls you up and they're like, hey, I heard you're into the Bitcoin, it's doing well, that's a great time to sell. And whenever they tell you that it's gone really bad, they're like, hey, I heard you're into Bitcoin, you lost all your money, that's the time to buy. So you have these, we all already have them in our lives, these people that will tell you the right thing, just like when Paris Hilton got into NFTs or when Paris Hilton got into Bitcoin. But it's harder to listen to those signs. So again, I would also say one more idea is you could listen like 20%. You could be like, hey, you know, Bitcoin's at the bottom, I'm going to throw 20%, see if that's right. Or Bitcoin's at the top, I'm going to sell 20%, see if that's right. Or 10% or 5%. You can taste it, right? You don't all or nothing, all or nothing. Right? You have options. But we're running.
Oh, I was just going to say one thing with setting up a hardware wallet that I'd recommend is because I've had a few horror stories along the way. But when you initially, you know, record your seed, before you hide it away forever, wipe the device and then put the seed in again and make sure that you've got like the same address, just in case. Because I've heard people that have not either, you know, not written the seed down properly, or they've written the wrong seed somehow. So like the best thing to do, wipe it, as Martin said, just so that you're comfortable with that process, wipe it, and then put that seed in again, and just make sure that address that you're going to be sending your dollar cost averaging to is the address that you do own and you have recorded correctly. Because there'd be nothing worse than going back to your life savings in 20 years and realizing that you wrote, I don't know, duck instead of dick. Or maybe that's probably not words, but you know, that's just an example.
Or if you wipe off the little sheet and the ink goes away, like Dan had happen to him, because it's a plastic card that you're writing on. Make sure you're writing on a proper piece of paper with a proper pen and so forth, something that you think is going to last. Other people have used those register receipts from a thermal printer, and you put that through a laminating machine, and now you'll never see your thermal printed receipt again because you just laminated it, turned black. So a lot of that kind of stuff happens with actual money on it, horrifying amounts that would terrify you now as a new user. But that was the way of the world. So we can learn from other people's mistakes and try to do better the next time. We're moving on to issue four, Satoshi Anonymous. As Edward Snowden said recently on Twitter, 14 years ago today, yet Satoshi remains anonymous. Remarkable. And I just wanted to, you know, take a topic here and celebrate the anonymity of Satoshi, how impossible it seems or sounds that someone has written such a monumentous paper as the white paper, someone has published amazing software like the Bitcoin software, and yet nobody has come forward and say, hey, Satoshi's my cousin. Hey, I worked with Satoshi. Hey, Satoshi. No one with a credible theory, at least, many posers and pretenders, but we all know in the truth, Satoshi has not been found. Dan, Eve, what do you think about Satoshi's incredible anonymity, truly unmatched in history? People have written books anonymous. They usually come out within 3 or 4 years. To last 10 years is amazing, but 14 and still going, with the entire media just desperate to find out who is Satoshi Nakamoto.
Well, it's the sort of thing that I just think that we don't need to know, because it would, whatever happens, whoever it ends up being, I don't actually think there's many reasons or many positive ways it could be spun. No matter who it is on Earth, it's going to polarize. And so it's just better that we don't actually ever know. And that I think that it's, and it's really just poetic the way it happened. It was, you know, he just disappeared off into the sunset, and no one's heard, you know, no one's heard from him since. So I think that's the way it needed to be, because that person becomes a vitalic. They become an idol, for that's a living idol that could do something or say something stupid politically, and then, you know, Bitcoin dumps because of it or pumps because of it. And Bitcoin doesn't need that. It needs to be just this independent thing. You know, the ball was thrown in the air, and now the world is keeping the ball up. We don't need to know who threw the ball in the air, other than know that it's a pseudonym and that they did a really cool thing and the concepts, the reasons behind it. The fact that the white paper was born on was Halloween is quite interesting. Whether that was whether that was done on purpose or not, I don't think there's ever been any reference to tie it down to specifically to Halloween, or that it was just an arbitrary date that was released. But you know, Satoshi from the chat rooms and stuff, it was like, you know, obviously Satoshi's a Japanese name, but the Genesis block was, it quoted the Times, which is an English newspaper, didn't use Proton, but like the German Proton, if I remember right, you didn't use a German Proton email or something like that. So it's kind of a bit of a mix up of like a patchwork of the world, and it just needs to kind of stay that way. But one thing I know is that it's definitely not Craig Wright.
No, it's not Craig Wright. He's fake Toshi.
And like Dan says, we have a patchwork of clues, but we don't even really have a solid lead where we're like, oh, Satoshi was definitely at this internet cafe in Japan on the 30th, or that he was in London on the 12th. We don't have any real solid information to go to for Satoshi. We have things like they analyze his sentence structure, and they say what words he used often and how he puts two spaces after his periods, which means he must be from a typewriter generation like myself, an old bastard that learned how to type not even on a computer. But still, to create such a thing, presumably to profit from such a thing, if he had any early coins that aren't the Satoshi coins, which just seems pretty obvious, he'd have tons. To not mention it, to not brag about it, to not tell a woman, to tell a lover, to have a major divorce, to have family members get upset, to have, for example, the Unabomber. They ID'd his typewriter, but at the same time, they really caught him because his family member, his brother, said, hey, that sounds like the crazy stuff my brother says. He lives in a cabin in the woods. He's bombing people? That's unacceptable. Martin Wishmeyer, no one has ratted Satoshi out despite the amazing money you could get from the media, the money you could get from blackmailing him, the money you could get from having early Bitcoin. No Satoshi anywhere.
Personally, I think Satoshi looked at what came before Bitcoin. And, well, we've had many different forms of digital cash before that, but fairly recent before Bitcoin was Liberty Reserve and E-Gold. And in both cases, the founders of those networks, well, it didn't end well. So I think that was like a lesson for Satoshi to never, ever reveal his identity. And I think it was good. And on many of those altcoins you see nowadays, they have a CEO, a founder, a marketing team, a community manager, and stuff like that. But Bitcoin doesn't need that. Bitcoin survives on its own. And I think this is one of the reasons why Bitcoin is far superior to all the other coins.
And Martin, I think the failure of eGold and Liberty Reserve also kind of taught people to distrust new coin projects. When Bitcoin comes along, it's released on Halloween, there's a paper, you're kind of looking at it for a couple months, and all of a sudden the software pops out. It's got a really goofy name.
The failure with the previous systems was that it was centralized, and you know, eGold was all good and well and was backed by gold and all. But once the gold was raided by, I don't know, FBI or whoever raided it, a government institution, the value of eGold was basically like gone. So that was a big lesson for Satoshi Nakamoto to make it decentralized. But when you make it decentralized, you make it peer-to-peer, how are you going to issue the cash? So, you know, I think he did a brilliant job there. And sometimes you wonder, yes, I wish I'd known who Satoshi was, but as Dan said, it doesn't really matter anymore. It's there.
And of course, historically, we all know the story of Prometheus, who brought fire to man and then was punished by being strapped to a rock and having his liver eaten every day. And then his liver would grow back and then the bird would come back and eat it again. So I'm sure Satoshi kept that in mind when deciding to stay anonymous. However, now it's time for the exit question, where you will predict the future. Tell me the story, Dan. Does Satoshi Nakamoto ever reveal himself or herself or the alien self? Does it happen on their deathbed? Are they revealed 20 years, 30 years, 40 years down the line? Do they write some kind of paper and hide it underneath a house or in a vault that's one day discovered? Do we ever learn who Satoshi is?
Yeah, if we did, it would have to be via Satoshi himself, because there's enough people that have trawled through every fraction of evidence that you could guess who Satoshi was. We would have realized by now. We're like nearly 14 years on. Yeah, nearly 14 years on since the Genesis box. We are 14 years since the white paper. So I think we would have known by now. I mean, there's been interesting articles I've read in the past about how certain government agencies have got way more of an idea than anyone else because of the access to the information that they have. You know, as a general person, you just simply don't have access to the same data that someone in the government that can, you know, that can write a, what's the word, write a some sort of
Freedom of Information Act request.
Information Act, but even more so than that, more from a you know, like a warrant, essentially a warrant, right, a data warrant. So I think that the governments are more likely to have that information, but it seems well enough dispersed now the way Satoshi went around hiding his identity that no one's, I don't think we'll ever find out. So it would have to be on the deathbed. And even so, I think the principle of, you know, to be silent for so long already, and you know, that I think there's a I don't know, I just can't see him doing it. I can't see it happening. I just like the fact that it's a mystery, you know. It's that the mysteriousness of it makes it sells it more for me than if I was to find out who it was. And I think they know that. They know that if they came out of the Satoshi closet, it would change the ball game completely. And you don't want that, I think. And Bitcoin doesn't want it, and it doesn't need it.
Of course, I'm reminded of one of my favorite movies, Wag the Dog, where Dustin Hoffman says over and over again, if you're the producer, nobody knows what you do. You get the credit. How could this Satoshi person not want the credit? How could you not want it now? How could you not want it in 20 years if this is truly a monetary revolution like we all think it's going to be? How could they not want the credit? It's an amazing story. It's an amazing amount of control. Martin, what do you think? Will Satoshi be outed by family and friends? Will Satoshi reveal themselves on the deathbed? Or will we never know who Satoshi is?
I don't think we'll ever know. I think there, personally, I think Satoshi is probably no longer alive. Yeah, we'll never know.
All right, bonus exit question in case it comes out next week who Satoshi is. Who are our usual suspects? Who are the names we're going to throw into this ring, good or bad, that we've heard? Obviously, I'll start. Nick Szabo, a lot of people talked about that early on. They had this linguistic analysis where they used the same sentence structure, the same words. Adam Back, friend of the show, incredible programmer. Szabo was not mentioned in the white paper. He didn't link to the article, so maybe he's trying to cover it up. Adam Back invented proof of work. He's in the right place at the right time, has all the right knowledge. Hal Finney, a big early programmer, contributor to Bitcoin, maybe talking to himself the whole time.
Sassy Man?
Huh?
Sassy Man, Len Sassy Man, or something like that? What's the other? Remember him? That was the other early contributor.
Okay, the other early contributor, kind of anonymous. They have his name, though, or they have like an alias for him, the number three guy. Could be him. Dan, who else you got?
Well, as BTC Moon guy, says John Nash.
John Nash is an excellent solution. Ben is always saying that. Early cryptographer, had all the kind of knowledge, a beautiful mind, the Russell Crowe film. Very, very possible, John Nash. What's the Joy Ito? I've heard thrown around, very smart MIT computer scientist. I think Adam Back told me that one, if you want to put it in the record. But again, we don't know. I don't think Adam knows unless Adam's Satoshi, so on and so forth. I don't have any.
But I don't think he would have referenced himself in the white paper. He wouldn't have referenced himself, you know?
It's the other side of the Szabo coin, right? Where you're like, you're either not referencing yourself on purpose or you're being super cheeky and you're referencing yourself because who would reference themselves?
Yes. Yeah. A double bluff thing.
So I don't think we know. I don't think the chat knows. I think it's like Dan said, it's a great mystery. It helps sell Bitcoin. Certainly when you get in it, you're like, I'm going to find out. I'm going to read all the right articles. I'm going to figure this mystery out. But at the end of it, you just come back with more mystery.
But one point that I did see, I think it was I'm trying to find the comment on the Snowden post. It was when I was looking through it, but
there were some pretenders, I think, on the Snowden post. There's some like a lot of discussion of somebody who claims to be Satoshi but doesn't seem to provide any proof. That doesn't seem to interest me. Yeah.
Oh no. Well, I was thinking. Well, actually, here goes. So funnily enough, actually, the comment I'm going to see here is. But crypto bros have murdered any possibility of this ever becoming a thing. So I love the classic crypto bros. People hate bros, don't they? But no, the comment was the fact that the governments, will have control via CDBCs. So I'm still kind of thinking that there's this slight, the conspiracy theory that it was invented by government to get something that's loved by anarchists, that the idea that it is just completely decentralized, and to let that spread, but then to make it more acceptable to have a CDBC, CBDC, and also just the other theory of the US creating it because it's a hedge against the waning power of the dollar being used as the kind of the world's currency. So once it finally proliferates around the world, the CIA could turn around and be like, aha, now that everyone's using Bitcoin, we've got a million of it because we are Satoshi, something crazy like that.
They build more Smithsonian museums,
and then they build more Smithsonians. Exactly. But no, I think
it was all worth it. Mad Bitcoins was in on the plot the whole time.
Yeah.
No, but I do love the CIA conspiracy theory option. I do think we have to consider it. Somebody has those Satoshi coins, and if it is the CIA or the U.S. government, it would be an incredible reveal. And what a like beautiful con, like Dan is saying, to have all these anarchists and libertarians and Mises people and economic people all out there supporting your coin. And at the end of the day, you're like, we, the U.S. government, are just so clever that we invented an alternative currency just in case our currency, which is number one, and that we back up with warships, ever falters. It's very clever. They'd have to be very clever, right?
And then they sell everything to Tim Draper.
Yeah.
Well, they tricked him because they have millions more. They can crash the market and pull those right back. They're very powerful in these scenarios, but it'll make a lot of great movies and a lot of great stories and a lot of great stuff that I hope to read in the future about who is Satoshi. So I look forward to that. But we're running out of time. Martin Wischmeyer, prediction or story of the week? Go ahead.
Story of the week. So, yeah, I should have thought about this, but yeah, we are going to the LA BigConf, and so we're working on getting everything sorted. So, yes, I believe last week we had a coupon code. So if any of you is in the area, I think it will be primarily Spanish speakers, Spanish language speaking Bitcoiners, though, which is unfortunate. I don't speak any Spanish yet. It's the second largest language in crypto. So maybe at one point I'll have to learn Spanish, but my colleagues will there. So we'll be there. So if you're coming over, do join us. Another nice new feature is that we created a new product, like it's a conversion kit, which will convert another brand, Bitcoin ATM, very popular by Gen Mega. It's a kiosk machine. They have stopped creating new features for this model ATM. So clients of us asked us if we could build a conversion kit. So we did, and we launched it this week. It's a small box with the ATM operating system on it. You connect all your peripherals in the ATM, and then you can turn your aging old Gen Mega kiosk, you can turn it into a brand new General Bytes ATM, and then you can, you know, use all the features, all the benefits, automated accounting, everything. So yes, I hope it will become a big success. It probably means we will sell less ATMs in the future, because people can convert any of the existing ATMs to a new standard. But I think it's good. We are helping many of the clients that are left in the dark. We are helping them out with a new OS for their aging Bitcoin ATM. So with a little bit of luck, you'll be seeing new General Bytes ATMs pop up in different form factors. So yeah, that was my story of the week.
That's a very cool idea, to let them continue to use their ATMs and to get new software, especially when the original company no longer exists. Also, Martin, tú necesitas hablar español, es muy bueno.
Ich habe keine Ahnung, was du sagst.
Das ist gut. See, Duolingo, you can learn all the languages. Dan, Eve, a prediction or a story of the week? Go ahead.
Story of the week's got to be the awesome Pepe Art event in London. It was really cool. It was a great turnout, and I had a bit of a sing-song, along with Roger 9000 was there as well. So he also performed. If you haven't checked out Roger 9000 students, he's got some incredible, they're the best like visuals I've seen in Bitcoin songs. Like, he's got really amazing music, and yeah, he performed. That was really cool. And I bought this hat, which is amazing. It's got the old Pepe, like squash face Pepe. And then I also bought a piece for the wall as well, that wasn't in the auction, but I saw it on the wall and I had to have it, so I bought it. But I didn't take it home with me because I was drunk, and as you do at Bitcoin conferences. And apart from that, it was really cool. Yeah. So if you got to go to these Bitcoin art events are incredible, because there's just so much creativity in Bitcoin, and it's just a really cool thing to go and see. And it's so exciting to kind of chat about crypto art and Bitcoin art to people. So yeah, I think get yourself to a Bitcoin art event and check it out.
Also, check out Web3.
WCN's own Theo was there as well. Obviously, he's the auctioneer, doing a great job. And so that was cool.
Very cool for Theo and for Rare Pepes. Good to see people celebrating Rare Pepes. They're a classic blockchain collectible. But we're running out of time. Thanks to everybody in the chat for chatting during the show. Be sure to give us a thumbs up and a comment down below. Push subscribe if you haven't already. And until next time,
bye-bye.